Dear congregation, this morning we look at the fifth commandment, which we have in Exodus 20, verse 12. Honour thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And we look at that together with the summary of that commandment in Lord's Day 39. Question 103, which you can find on page 75 of your Psalter. We read there, what doth God require in the fifth commandment? And it answers, that I show all honour, love, and fidelity to my father and mother, and all in authority over me, and submit myself to their good instruction and correction, with due obedience, and also patiently bear with their weakness and infirmities, since it pleases God to govern us by their hand. Just as we begin here, I'd like to think about the place and the importance of this commandment. I think very obviously we see its importance when we look at society around us. To such a large extent, society has disregarded this commandment and all respect for authority. Whether you think of government officials, or police, or nurses, or teachers, really wherever we look, we see such a breakdown in respect for authority. It used to be, even in society at large, it used to be that that seniors were respected and cared for, not pushed off to the side, certainly not pressured to end their lives early because they're a burden upon those looking after them. And when you see that disregard on the one side for seniors, you also see at the same time what you could almost call a cult of youth, where the youth are put into a place where they must be listened and followed. There's this reversal of the order of things, where youth begin to dictate to the adults how things ought to be, and you see that at every level. And it's very much promoting an individualistic society. You do what you want. Don't have other people tell you what to do. Your life is your own. That kind of idea. And the very idea then of someone else being your superior, of someone else telling you what to do and you listening and obeying, is something to be resisted at all costs. And maybe especially the older ones here might ask, but really we all ought to ask, how did we get here? How did America get here? Because this is not the way it always was. Well, I read a part of an author, Annie Gottlieb, and she identifies the 60s, quote, as the generation that destroyed the American family. She says, we might not have been able to tear down the state, but the family was closer. We could get our hands on it. We truly believed that the family had to be torn apart to free love. The first step was to tear ourselves free from our parents. I think, not surprisingly, we find this lady also as the author of a book called Wishcraft, How to Get What You Really Want. But for all that Annie Gottlieb says that is wrong and even wicked, what is true is this. The connection between what you see in society and what happens in the home. The connection between what you see in society and what happens in the home. You destroy the family, you will destroy society. So the importance when we look around and we see the disrespect for authority. But you can also look at the place of the commandment in the Ten Commandments. Very obviously, the fifth commandment is not in the first four commandments. Remember, the first four commandments are the commandments that speak primarily to our relationship and the love that we're to have for God. You're to have no other gods before me. You worship me only in the way that I have commanded you. You show honor and respect for my name. I am Lord of your time, and I have appointed this day in seven to be a holy Sabbath to myself. The Lord is giving us his authority over us first. And then you have the fifth commandment that is the beginning of the second table of the law that speaks about our love to our neighbour, to our fellow man. And the placement of the fifth after the first four then is telling us this, that you cannot love your fellow man if you do not love God. Love to God is first. And this relationship to God is the foundation of every other relationship. It's what shapes, if you will, every other relationship. But you can also look at this commandment, not just in terms of the whole Ten Commandments, but where it comes in terms of the second table of the law, the last six commandments. If I was to say to you that I would give you these commandments from 5 to 10, and you would mix them up, and then I would say, well, you put them in the order of what you think is most important, would many of us not say, well, I think we would put thou shalt not kill before the fifth, or thou shalt not commit adultery before the fifth, or steal or lie, that should come before the fifth. But you see, God in his wisdom has put the fifth first in terms of the second table of the law. And really what that's telling us is that every other relationship you see has its foundation here in the fifth, in the home. That this is where the sense of authority and the sense of respect come from. That a person who loves and honours and shows faithfulness to the parent is going to show love and honour and faithfulness to the life of someone else, to the wife of someone else, to the possessions of someone else, to truth itself. Augustine writes, if anyone fails to honour his parents, is there anyone he will spare? So ordinarily, if you have a kind and mannerly pupil at school, or if you have a hard-working, considerate and kind colleague at work, you can trace it back, normally, to a well-ordered home. So as we look at this commandment then, honour thy father and thy mother, we want to see three things here. Firstly, the duty prescribed for children. Secondly, the duty implied for parents. And thirdly, the promise attached for both. The duty prescribed for children, the duty implied for parents, and the promise attached for both. So firstly here, the duty prescribed for children. And children, really in one word, it's this word that you have at the beginning of the commandment, the word honour. Really everything is packed into that word. Now, when you honour something, the word honour has the idea of something that has weight. When you honour something, you treat it seriously. You treat it as having weight. You respect it. The opposite would be to treat it lightly, to sneer at it or think it's irrelevant. It's something that has no weight. And this is the word that's often used for God. We are to honour God. We're to treat him with the utmost respect. We dare not treat him lightly. We ought to listen to everything he says. And so children, this means that you're going to let your parents speak when they want to speak to you. You're not going to interrupt when they speak to you. You're going to listen respectfully. and you're going to obey and submit to their good instruction. This is especially true when you're still at home. Like we read in Ephesians 6:1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And the Catechism does elaborate on the biblical teaching that of this command. It says that I show all honour, love and fidelity or faithfulness to my mother and father and all in authority over me, and submit myself to their good instruction and correction with due obedience, and also patiently bear with their weakness and infirmity. So there's a lot in here. You look at all these verbs. We're to honour, we're to love, we're to show faithfulness, we're to submit, we're to obey, we're to be patient and bear with our parents. We're certainly to love them. Love your parents. Now, children, your parents love you. You often hear parents say, I would do anything for my child. This really is the most natural thing you would say for a parent to do to a child, is to love a child. Kevin DeYoung, who writes on this commandment, I think very helpfully, he writes something that I think every parent here will acknowledge. When he says, I didn't understand when I was a child, but the life of a parent is one of constant sacrifice. It's joyful, but it's a sacrifice of parents' money, time, energy, desires, sleep, and sometimes tears. It's an office and a responsibility of great sacrifice. But isn't it true that it's love for children that makes the sacrifice seem at times so small and so joyful? I remember when I used to visit, as many of you will remember, Elsie Arnouts, and she would often say, speaking about this time of life, these are the best days of your life. They're busy days, but they are the best days of your life. But it seems that the reverse of this is not so easy. Would children do anything for their parents? Would they spend many sleepless nights for them? Would they give up money and time and energy and desires for them? Children, and that's including all of us, because we are to love our parents with this self-sacrificial love, and we're to patiently bear with their weaknesses and infirmities. So love recognizes parents have faults, and every parent here has a fault. We have sin. We're not what we ought to be, and we ought to indeed ask for forgiveness for the times we have not been what we ought to be. But from your side, children, from our side, children, we ought to patiently bear with the weakness and infirmity of our parents with love. Now, Kevin DeYoung has four helpful words or phrases that I think that capture this for children. And this is especially for you children here, but really for us all. Four words that capture what it is to honour our parents. Firstly, yes, Dad, yes, Mum. So if your mum, for example, asks, can you clean the mess? You don't say, but it wasn't me. Because the question wasn't, did you make the mess, but can you clean the mess? And when you come back with a quick and a cheerful answer, yes, Mum, or yes, Dad, this both honours God, honours your parents, and pleases God. So yes, Dad, yes, Mum. But also, thank you, Dad, and thank you, Mum. And when you think about it, there are hundreds and thousands of reasons to say thank you to Mum and to Dad. Thank you for bringing me up. Thank you for feeding me today. Thank you for feeding me all the days of my life. But thank you also for praying for me. Thank you for teaching me to pray. Thank you for reading the Bible. Thank you for teaching me the Bible. Thank you for bringing me to church. Thank you for bringing me to church twice. Thank you for showing me that these things were of central importance in our lives. Yes, Dad, Mum. Thank you, Dad, Mum. Thirdly, I'm sorry. No doubt the hardest at times to say. Kevin DeYoung again says, don't say it like the world. Don't say, I'm sorry if you were offended, but. Don't say, I'm sorry, but what they did was worse. Just say, I'm sorry. And if there has been sin, then we come and we ask for forgiveness. Here's where the sin is. Here's where I'm asking forgiveness. And then to honor father and mother, you give children forgiveness to your parents. And then lastly, the fourth one is hello. Say hello. Perhaps this is more for when children leave the home, but pick up the phone, stop in. DeYoung says there is probably nothing that a mum or dad would like more in all the world than to see all their kids and grandkids in one place. So say hello. And I'd like now to look at one more specific way in which we honour our parents, a very important way. And of course, there's many things we could say here, but there's this one, and it's when you are choosing a spouse. Because our culture teaches us that this is a very, like everything else, private thing, a very individual thing. This is what I'm going to do, and really nobody else can tell me what to do. But 1 Corinthians 7 verse 38 speaks about the father who gives, or the father who does not give, the daughter in marriage. The context there is speaking about a time of persecution, and Paul says it's good if the father gives the daughter in marriage, but it's even better in this situation if he doesn't. But the point here is that it's the father who gives the daughter in marriage. And so the point here for children, for you young people, is that to honour your parents, you need your father's blessing. To honour your parents in marriage, you need your father's blessing. Now, of course, we have to say that it is possible for parents to wrongly oppose a marriage. You could think of an extreme case, I suppose, a convert from Islam marrying a Christian, and the father opposes and says, no, you can't. Well, that's obviously a very extreme case. But even there, to honour a parent, you would still listen carefully, patiently, prayerfully to the objections. And if Christian love grows between the couple and they're convinced God has brought them together, then man ought not to oppose that union. But you need to know that that's the exception. Where you have Christian parents who themselves are praying over you, their counsel, their advice, their blessing should be a non-negotiable for you. And let me again here quote Kevin DeYoung. I think he says this very well. And maybe some of you can relate. Kids need parents. This is a biblical truth. And the very moment, listen young people, the very moment we think we don't need our parents is probably the moment we need them more than ever. When you're 7 or 8, you don't even think about life without your parents. You need someone to feed you. Then you grow up and you get to a point where you think, I don't know, maybe I could do this on my own. Maybe what my friends want is a little more important. Maybe what they're doing is going to serve me better than what my parents think I should be doing. When you get to that point as a teenager, you think, I don't really know if this is a relationship I need. It's at that point you need your mum and dad more than ever to love and to encourage you, to set appropriate boundaries for you, and sometimes to guard you from your own impulses. That's very good advice. But I want to see here now how this commandment, as it were, spills over, just to notice these things. The Catechism tells us, it speaks about parents a father and mother. And then it says all in authority, showing that this foundation relationship then spills over and shapes, if you will, every other relationship. And it makes sense when you think about it. Where do we as young people get our first impressions of this God-ordained principle of authority and respect? Where's the first place that we get this concept that someone else can tell us what to do and we ought to do it? And that it's good for us to do it? And that it's right for us to do that? That we must listen and learn and trust those who are bigger and wiser and in authority over us? We learn it at home. And indeed, at home, we can say, are the first impressions the child will get of God himself. That's why God takes this commandment so seriously. Because to misrepresent it is to misrepresent him. Which is a serious thing for us parents. But when you have this in place, then this transition to the other spheres of life becomes a lot easier. We show honor, love, and fidelity to father and mother, and then to all in authority over us. What begins in the home reaches to the church which is the spiritual mother. What begins in the home reaches to the school and the college. What begins in the home ends up often in the relationship between husband and wife, and the relationship, as we read in Ephesians 5, there. And so it's no hardship and it's no surprise for us to hear, husbands, love your wives. Wives, submit to your husbands. That's not seen as a bad thing. That's seen as a wonderful thing. Indeed, that is almost an extension of what we learned at home. It's no surprise or hardships for employees to obey their employers, to honour the king. But let's move here then, secondly, and a little more quickly, to the duty that's implied for parents. The duty that is prescribed for children is to honour their parents. But the duty implied for parents is to exercise authority over children. That tells you right away that parents are not to be passive. Parents don't just leave children to figure things out. Read Proverbs. Does Solomon leave his son to work things out? Look at the instruction. Look at the comprehensive instruction Solomon gives his son. Look at how he takes the law of God and applies it to his son at different stages of his life. Solomon is not passive. We ought not to be passive in our parenting or in our authority over others. Remember what God says to Abraham, or of Abraham. I know Abraham, he will what? Suggest to his family? Discuss with his family? No, I know Abraham, he will command his children and his household after him that they shall keep the way of the Lord. And in many ways then, parents and those in authority, but we're thinking of parents especially here, parents act as God's representatives to the children. God is, as it were, setting the parents like a lieutenant, like someone who is representing God, and we might even say representing God as the prophet and the priest and the king to the children. They are the prophets. They are the ones who are going to teach and instruct the children. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and don't forsake the law of your mother. They're to be prophets. They are, in the best way, to indoctrinate. That word often has a bad connotation, but properly, we do put doctrine, teaching, biblical teaching, into the minds of our children. But we're also to be priests, in the sense that we bring children before God. We're the first to bring our children to God in prayer. We bring the needs of our children to the great high priest himself in prayer, and we bring them to the throne of grace, and we plead for the Lord's covenant mercies for them. We are prophets, priests, and kings. Again, you notice how the Catechism says it pleases God that they govern us by their hand. It's a qualification for eldership, 1 Timothy 3:4. One that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. This means also then that parents must discipline and correct their children. Now, we have that saying, you spare the rod, you spoil the child. That expression, to spoil a child, is a very interesting one. Think of things that you can spoil. You can spoil meat. You overcook it or you undercook it. You can spoil milk by leaving it out. You can spoil a date night by forgetting something important. How do you spoil a child? What is a spoiled child? Is it a child that doesn't have a good grade point average? Is it a child that doesn't get on well socially? Is that a spoiled child? No. A spoiled child is a child that always gets their own way. To get your own way always is such a big thing for a child that we call it a spoiled child. It's a child that doesn't submit to God-appointed authority. And so parents, if you don't want to spoil your child, you need to exercise loving but firm discipline. And we emphasize both loving and firm. Not soft or harsh, but loving and firm. He that spares his rod hates his son, Proverbs 13:24. But he that loves him chastens him betimes. It's so important that it be done firmly, but also lovingly. Discipline ought never to be impulsive. It ought never to be just a way to vent anger. That's a terrible thing, because you distort the fatherhood of God when you do that. Fathers, Ephesians 6:4, provoke not your children to wrath. Colossians 3:21, fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Duma writes, chastisement is a bitter pill that must be coated with wisdom and dispensed with love. Otherwise, the pill will be spit out. Chastisement is a bitter pill that must be coated with wisdom and dispensed with love. Otherwise, the pill will be spit out. We know that children, rebellious children, can make life miserable for parents. But the same can be true the other way around, and that ought not to be. So we shouldn't always be ordering our children around, always finding fault for the smallest things. It will frustrate, it will discourage, and it will anger them. So parental authority must be loving, but it is also limited. The Catechism, I think, helpfully tells us that children submit to the good instruction and correction. Now that, young people, doesn't mean that you can submit to your parents as long as you think it's good, as long as it fits into your plan and it's good in that way. That's not the idea. The idea is that it's in keeping with the law of God. You're not being told to do something that would make you sin or make you go against the law of God. So you would never disobey God. You would always obey God rather than man when you're being asked to sin. Think of Abraham leaving Ur of the Chaldees and leaving his father's house. Why? Because God told him. You think of Ruth. Who knows what pressure Ruth had in the home in Moab to stay and not to go. But because she was joining herself with the people of God, because she was forsaking idolatry, she left her father's house. And she said, thy people are my people. And so parents, we have a responsibility to adorn our office as parents. and as superiors, whoever we are, if we're in this position. And we're to do so, we're to try by grace to live and instruct and correct our children in such a way that it would be a delight for them to honour us. And the best way to do that, and actually the only way to do that, is for us to depend upon the great high priest and the great prophet and the great king. Before we are prophets, priests and kings to our children, we ought to be the ones who go to the great prophet, the Lord Jesus Christ himself, and hear what he has to say and listen to his words and be daily in the Bible. How are we going to know what to tell our children? How can we possibly give our children good instruction except we're listening daily at his gates, waiting at the posts of his doors, reading the word, being in the word, soaking ourselves in the word, the words of the great prophet. And having Christ as the great high priest, that before we administer discipline, we ourselves are going for mercy and for grace, because we are sinners and we are lawbreakers and we are those who need someone else to be patient and kind and caring and compassionate and merciful to us. And so we're going to the high priest, and when we see how merciful, how gracious, how loving, how kind he is to us, then that ought to filter down to the way we treat our children. And Christ, as the great king, we submit to all his laws. We don't discuss or negotiate with the king. We submit lovingly and cheerfully to his law. And then this order, The order Joshua gives us, comes into force. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. So we must, here is what is implied for parents, that we exercise loving authority over our children. Came across a very sobering account of a young man in New York some time ago. He was convicted for appalling offences, and he ended up committing suicide. But he left this note behind: "My parents brought me up to believe in God and to believe that he didn't matter." May we be parents who bring our children up to believe in God and believe that he is who and what matters most of all. But let's just briefly here notice this promise that is attached. This is the first commandment, Paul tells us, with promise. And it's a promise of long life, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God gives thee. Now, you need to know that this is not a guarantee that you live into your 80s or 90s. That's not the primary idea. However, you can't exclude that idea either of literal long life. Children, as we know, are accident prone. We say maybe especially when they're young. We tell them, don't go near the fire. Don't go near the road. We keep poison away from them. We keep medicine away from them. We keep things that are dangerous away from them. And as they get older, we advise in the choice of friends. If sinners entice you, consent not. We warn them about the use of drugs and pornography and things like that. And in Proverbs especially, you see this close connection that Proverbs gives us between parental instruction on the one hand and life, and between refusing instruction and death. That's how important this is. So you hear Solomon saying, "My son," and he talks to the son about wisdom, and you need to get wisdom. You need to get Christ, who is the wisdom of God. Length of days is in her right hand. She is a tree of life, Proverbs 3 tells us, to them that lay hold on her. She shall give life to your soul. You will walk safely and your foot will not stumble. And in Proverbs 2:16, Solomon speaks about the strange woman, and what does her house go towards? Death. And that's the advice. Don't go there. Don't go near that place. Her path goes to the dead. None that go into her return again, and they don't take hold of the paths of life. So you see, instruction, listening to your parents, life, refusing that instruction, leads to a dangerous and a deadly path. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. But this promise does speak to spiritual blessings, maybe even primarily. It's telling you that when you honour God in this way, God's smile is on you. It pleases God that they govern us in this way. You will know the blessing of God. So this commandment is saying, children, you do this, you obey this, you seek grace to go this way. It's saying, as Solomon said, or as David said to Solomon when David was dying, therefore, my son, know the God of your father. It's saying, go in the way of your parents' good instruction. Walk in their ways. Seek their God. Follow the gospel that they have been impressing on your minds. And the God who was their God is your God too. You will live long in the land of God's presence and blessing. You will belong to the best family. I know that for some this commandment is hard to listen to because you don't have good experiences of fathers and or mothers. And that is sad. But this commandment is coming with comfort for you. And it's saying, God the Father will be your Father in Jesus Christ. Christ will be your elder brother. The saints of every age will immediately be your family. And you will have life abundant in that family. People today are obsessed with extending their lives as far as they can in this world and trying to find a treatment that will reverse or at least slow down death. What would that be for the people of God? There's Job in the Old Testament, and he's afflicted, but he says, I would not live always. Because he has his eye upon the resurrection and upon the Redeemer who lives and standing on the earth in the last days, and his eyes seeing God. I would not live here always. Paul is an old man and he's saying, I'm in this difficult situation. I desire to depart and to be with Christ. That's far better. But to stay with you is more needful for you, and so I'm in this strait between two. Even then for those, when you look at this promise of long life, even for those of God's people who die young, and some who die in their mother's womb, what do they have to look forward to? But endless life with God. An endless eternity of life and everlasting pleasure in the Father's house. That's real blessing. And that's bound up in this promise. Blessed is the womb that bare you and the paps which gave you suck, one woman said to Jesus in Luke 11. And he said rather this, blessed are they who hear the word of God and who do it. Keep this commandment in the Lord. This commandment, like every other commandment, shows us our need of Christ. Which of us can look at this commandment and say, supposing this was the only commandment we had ever had to keep, which of us can look at this commandment and say, all these things I have kept from my youth up? If we would say that, we would deceive ourselves. And the truth would not be in us. But if we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Obey your parents in the Lord includes surely a looking to the Lord, a depending upon the Lord, a looking to Christ, to the one whose blood cleanses from this sin. To one whose blood gives us the confidence to pray, sins of youth remember not. All my trespasses forget. looking to the Lord who kept this commandment perfectly, who in his first moments as in his human nature obeyed this commandment and never once didn't, who always honoured perfectly who always loved and showed honour and faithfulness to Mary and to Joseph, submitting to their good instruction, patiently bearing with their weakness and infirmity. Oh, what weakness and infirmity must he not have seen in them? What pain it must have given him to see the sin, the weakness and the infirmity of his parents, he who was wholly harmless and undefiled. How many times did he receive instruction that wasn't right, or correction that wasn't right? It must have happened. And yet he bears patiently with their weakness and infirmity. And then you see him at 12 years old, and he's in the temple, and he's speaking with the lawyers and other people, and his parents can't find him, and they come to him, and in many ways they rebuke him, and he says, so respectfully, don't you know that I must be about my father's business? And then later in that chapter, you read this. He went down with them, Luke 2:51. He went down with them and came to Nazareth. And here, as it were, is a summary of the first 29, 30 years of his life. And he was subject to them. How do you characterize these early years that we would love to know more about? Here's a summary. He was subject to his parents. He obeyed them. He honored them. He loved them. He showed faithfulness to them. He was patient with them. He forgave them their trespasses. So you can find him at his early life. You can find him at 12. You can find him at his death. And what is he doing? Even when he is suffering the pains of hell in his body and mind, and suffering to pay the debt for the sins, the fifth commandment sins of all his people, you find him saying to John, John, behold your mother. Mary, behold your son. Here is his concern, even on the cross of Calvary, that his mother would be cared for. And so, dear congregation, behold in this one, the one who magnified the law and made it honorable. Behold the one of whom the Father says, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Amen. Let us pray.